You said to me that you had a period where you stopped and then you ultimately started again that kind of ended up in your situation now, correct? What caused that starting up again? What was it? Was it just purely just the addictive personality?
So I don't want to use this as an excuse, man, but to be honest with you, the stress of a pandemic had a lot to do with
Yeah.
it. I was finally at a place where I had a stable job. Mind you, I wasn't making much, but it was stable. I was in a really great relationship where it looked like it was going to go up to something else, marriage, a child, really great relationship. And the pandemic came. I was living in another state back then. I was living up in Delaware, and I lost the job. I was living at a place that I was just paying monthly, cash, and there was no lease, there was nothing. So when there was no more money coming in, I come home one day and my stuff's all packed and on the door, and I'm like, what the heck is this? We're in the middle of a pandemic. I hate to put me on the street like that. So I ended up doing that. I ended up having to be homeless on the street. And just one thing led to another, the frustrations, no job. I lost the relationship. Also, it just became too much. And I started drinking, to be honest with you. I said, just the efforts started kicking in. So one day I go to the liquor store, I bought some beer, sat down, nothing happened. Then a few days later, I drank again. I ran into somebody I knew. It progresses, before, and when I come, when I come to see myself, I'm under a bridge, smoking crack. And it just went on from there.
I know the pandemic did a lot to a lot of people. I know relationship wise, substance abuse wise, and it's I know that we're still feeling the after effects of it, right? So yeah, no, I can empathize with that reality because yeah, when you're either stuck at home or you have no job and just the whole world's at a standstill, you start getting really scared, and that scare can be overwhelming. The fear can be overwhelming. And
Right.
it caused us to want
Yeah, it was
to
highly overwhelming, Dusty. It really was. It was like, I went from being in a stable place, making my way up, to below square one.
No, I hear you. I empathize with that. It's something that, I mean, again, it's almost like you have a grief, but it's an unknown reality to where that resolution is. It's not like someone passed away in your life that you loved, right? It's something different, and it's a new fear for a lot of people, right? They've never experienced that sort of, reality in life. I know that when the 1989 earthquake hit here, that was like a 7.1. I was a freshman in high school, and it was my first surreal, natural disaster type of event. And I remember like day, yeah,
Yeah, I
or
remember that
day,
earthquake.
it was.
That
And day three, yeah,
was in California.
day three was, because I witnessed, just the ground moving, the surrealness of it all. And then I saw the aftermath with, the damage that was done throughout the Bay Area. And I remember as a kid, it was difficult for me to process. It was so surreal. And it so threw my life into an imbalance because I didn't know, first of all, if it was going to happen again, what would be the reciprocal damage. And the whole state, went into a standstill. And I think that 9/11 also did that to a lot of people, right? 9/11 was a very surreal experience that this country's never really experienced. And so
Yeah, we've gone through a lot, man. We've gone through a lot in the last 20 years. Or rather, well, I'm gonna go, so I'm 48, so I've seen a lot of things happen in the past 20 years that have been quite monumental in this country. So we're in
24.
2023 right now. I'd say within the last 15 years, we've seen it, mounting more and more and more and more and more. like you had the earthquake in Haiti, you had the hurricane in Puerto Rico, we had the pandemic, you know, the inflation in this country, you know, right? Yeah. But it's a lot to process.
So I understand.
But I know a lot of addicts who who are clean and sober for years, yeah, and the pandemic did them in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I met a lot of people in detox that same type of situation. So you mentioned last time about just obviously having, you know, an addictive personality, right? And I think that all of us do that are suffering from, right, you know, addiction. It's not just simply maybe the alcohol or the drugs, right? But it ends up being these other things, right? Video games, workaholism, right? Self-educating to the point where you no longer sleep because you're just trying to learn and grow. And I think that's important, exactly, to understand about ourselves, because it forces us to constantly check our balance. It constantly forces us to make sure that, you know, are we in balance in our life? Are we doing the things in moderation? Because I'm the same way. I mean, I'm still dealing with, you know, a nicotine habit. I still chew, right? And it's something that I haven't let go yet.
I mean, I can relate to that because, you know, like I said, you know, I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and it even says in the literature, you know, when we substitute one for another, we pick up the addiction all over again. You know, it's whether you start going to the gym and become a gym rat, a workaholic. You start dedicating yourself to being a workaholic, your new addiction, you know, becoming overly of service. I mean, it's not that it's a bad thing. It keeps you in the middle of the plate, but I've experienced in my own journey where I involved myself so much in service, chairing meetings, volunteering to clean up a room on a Friday night, after having worked a really hard week, you know, as a plumber, then going to H&I meetings and just overdoing it and not allowing myself time to just calm down from everything else throughout the week. You know, going to meetings 7 days a week, being of service, coffee bar, chairing a meeting, helping here, helping there, going to volunteer barbecues, just to get my mind out of where I really am and not talking to my sponsor about, hey, I'm in a messed up place and I'm compensating by doing this, but I'm not addressing the issue. I'm just covering it up by ignoring it, compartmentalizing it, and ignoring it. And for me, ignoring that issue, back when I relapsed, back in June, was a big eye-opener. It taught me that no matter what's going on, talk about it. Because I wasn't talking about it. And it's funny, the relapse started 7 months before I actually pick up. People think that picking up is the relapse. No, the relapse starts here. It starts here. It starts with the messing around of the thoughts. Those intrusive thoughts, those irrational thoughts, those intrusive feelings that turn into resentments, the regrets, the haunting thoughts of the past mistakes that come back in your mind, and that starts putting you in a totally different place. You know, that starts taking you to a very dark place. So today I'm very aware of that. You know, I don't take on too much.
So, you know, I mean, they say that a normal person's thought pattern is roughly like 50,000 thoughts a day, whereas an addict's brain is typically like 80 to 100,000 thoughts a day. And that's just it, right? We're hyper aware. We're hyper thinkers. And I think that there is some good sometimes, but it's very, very finite where our addictive personality serves us well, right? For example, you know, trying to go and find a job, maybe have a project deadline that I've got to meet. So I have to be uber focused on those things. Have a project at the house that you want to get completed. So you have to stay uber focused on it. So those things are obviously good. But unfortunately we can't maintain that. We always continue to excess. That's our nature. Right. We go to excess. We always go to excess. Yeah.
Extreme excess. So I do have ADHD, so I tend to pile on more than I can take anyway. And instead of dedicating myself to one project, I'll take on multiple projects, and I never get used to get things done because I was in five different places at once and I didn't know why this was happening. I don't do that today. I tend to concentrate more on one thing and try and get that done, but I slip on that because I'm so ADHD and I don't take meds. Even though I have not been I have been diagnosed to some extent, but not fully diagnosed. So, but I know I have it. And I have been told that I do.
What ends up happening?
I have to be careful with jumping around.
Well, what ends up happening is that it becomes self-defeating, and then you feel bad about yourself because you took on all these projects and now you can't complete them. So now you feel lesser than. And so what do? You go back to finding a way to make yourself feel better. And it's a revolving door. And that doesn't serve us well at all. Right.
Being stuck in that revolving door in a hotel room.
Exactly.
I mean, in a hotel lobby, you know, where you're trying to go out, but more people are coming in and you can't get out.
You know, it's interesting because, I quit drinking coffee probably about 3 years ago because I recognized that even with coffee, I was drinking it in excess. I mean, I'd be drinking it all day. My nervous system would get fried, you know, and so I, you know, and there are obviously some sorts of addictions that you can find ways around that are easier than obviously the harder ones, such as, you know, drugs and alcohol. But I reflected last week where, so last weekend was gorgeous out. I mean, it was absolutely beautiful outside. And I was outside doing some yard work and I had to run to Lowe's to grab some things, some sprinkler parts. And I was driving home and I'm like, God, I'd love a beer right now. And I said, okay, so, but what does that mean? Right. What does that mean to me? Right? Ooh, if I were to go and say, I can have one. I'm like, no, the reality of it is that one would just want me to have multiples. And I know that if I try to satisfy the craving by going and getting some non-alcoholic beer, I'm like, I'll drink a half a dozen of them and I'll feel miserable and bloated. And like, why did I do that? So the one thing that has been powerful for me is that just I give it its respect that it's entered my mind, and I just wait it out. Because in waiting it out, I noticed, you know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes later, it's like it was completely gone out of my life, and I was back on with my day.
Exactly.
So, you know, patience is definitely something that is important for somebody who's suffering an addiction that wants to get better. I think that
I get those intrusive thoughts also, you know? And the other night right now I'm going through a certain life issue.
Nice.
And it's gotten a little better. It got a lot better as of yesterday. But the other night, you know, when I was mulling over everything that's happening to me. And I don't want to say sitting in a pity pot. I wasn't sitting in a pity pot, but I was like, you know, I felt defeated. And I got that thought that said, just one right now, man, would help. Snapped out of it. And I have these conversations that go on in my mind sometimes, you know, with my higher power, that it's that voice that I know that I recognize that it sounds like my voice, but I know it's not because it gives me wisdom. And it said to me, and what would that solve, Curtis? What would that solve? I mean, let's be real. You're on federal probation, man. You got to drop twice a week because you're on federal probation. You got to go Mondays and Thursdays. Do you really want to go back in? If you do, by all means, have at it. And I've come to realize, you know, that those intrusive thoughts that come in occasionally, like the, right. It's so freaking hot, man. Just one beer right now would be cool. They're just thoughts. They're just thoughts. I don't have to entertain them. I can recognize what it is through the process of thinking what I'm thinking about. Let it run its course and not act on it. Because I don't have to act on it. I just have to recognize that what I am, which is through the identification of my name is Carlos, I'm a grateful recovering addict. Recognizing that aspect of myself. The serenity prayer works a lot. Talking to God works a lot. You know, and I just recognize that it's just a thought. It's just a thought. I let it run its course in my mind. I didn't play all the pictures it wants to play. I just sit there and be like, okay, are you done? Are you done? Are you done? Get thee behind me. And I just sit there and I close my eyes and I pray. Sometimes there's feelings that come with it, you know? Those romantic feelings or those false romantic feelings of how good it used to feel. You know, the euphoria that comes with the high. But when you play the take forward, if you're one of those people that tends to play the take forward, I do. I recognize that one is too many, and I hate to sound cliche about this, Dusty, I really do. But, you know, one is too many and 1,000 is never enough for me. Because once I take one, I want another, and another, and another, and another. A 20 is going to turn into a 60. A 60 is going to turn into 100. 100 is going to turn into 200, 204. And it's going to keep going like that, and like that, and like that. And all I'm going to be is miserable at the very end. So my sponsor tells me a lot. The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. And the main thing is not to change my clean date. The main thing is not pick up, no matter what. Because the consequences, for me personally, are going to be devastating. I just bought a new car yesterday. Rather, it was bought for me, by the grace of God. It was bought for me. It's going to get registered for me. I will lose that. I will go back to prison. I will have to sit there in prison with this. I'm not going to get a hard cast. Medical sees you once every 3 to 4 months, even though you put in a request months before, until they get to you. It's just a landslide and an avalanche of negative consequences. And that's not something I'm willing to deal with. And that's not something I'm willing to risk. I've come too far. And I hope that whoever's out there listening to this, I hope it sticks. I hope them listening to this, that it sticks. You have to play the tape forward. Recognize the negative consequences of
good stuff.
You don't have to act on every thought.
You know, you brought up something that was important.
You don't have to act on every emotion.
And what I recognized when I first went into detox was that I no longer held myself accountable. I needed somebody else to basically hold me accountable for what I was doing. And that's the point. You get past the whole detoxification, you get into sober living, and you start making yourself accountable again.
That part.
And check yourself before you wreck yourself, you know, and the only way you can do that is if you're in a clean mind and spirit, right? You can't keep yourself accountable if you're constantly on something. You can't. Because your animal brain in the back of you is just going, no, just keep feeding yourself this stuff, right? Your rational brain is like, nah, I'm not going to exist right now while you're feeding me this stuff. And so my animal brain is just taking over, you know, and And that's important, is that a lot of people don't realize that, especially with addiction and disease. What I've come to understand is that when you start using any sort of thing that's illicit, right, you know, and even legal drugs, you know, alcohol, prescription drugs, and illegal substances, is that your rational brain basically shuts down. And it's just the way that it works, because your dopamine's starting to get fired from basically the substances that you're using. And those are all animalistic types of parts of your brain. And so you end up putting yourself again into this vicious cycle that you can't become rational anymore. And it's not until you completely eradicate yourself of that and fight through all of that detox, which, right, again, it's a fight. I mean, I remember day five, I wrote in my journal, it was just nothing but the F word across the whole page. Cause I was at my wit's end. I was firing on all cylinders. My brain's going, what are you doing to me? And even as quickly as, you know, day 25, I was like, hallelujah. I fought through all of that to get myself to truly be rationally thinking again. Of course, I'm still going through my withdrawal, my post-acute withdrawal symptoms. But it was like I was aware of what they were. I knew what they were. I no longer had to sit there and go, well, I feel like crap, so I'm going to use today. No, it was like, you're feeling like crap because you did use. Right. So stop using, and you won't feel like crap anymore. How's that sound?
You know, but you know what, though? It's not just the drugs and the alcohol. We mentioned this earlier. It's substituting, just like I mentioned earlier about substituting one for another. Anything that you do that working out too much, you work out so much and you dedicate so much to go to the gym because you don't want to do something else that is detrimental to your body, that you end up hurting yourself for overworking out at the gym. You mess up your knees, you mess up your shoulder, you mess up your wrists, you mess up your back because you're doing too much. You are a workaholic. You start neglecting your family life if you have one, or you start neglecting yourself because you're working so much. You're working 60, 70, 80 hours a week. You're not sleeping. You're barely eating. You don't have time to go do your laundry. And you start becoming so overwhelmed. Shopaholics, for instance, you know, they wanna, you know, they no longer do this, but now they do that. And whatever you do in life that becomes detrimental either to the mental aspect of what is you, the psychological aspect of what is you, the mental, you know, the emotional aspect of what is you, the spiritual aspect of what is you, and even the physical aspect of what is you, because you're either hurting yourself mentally, emotionally, spiritually, or physically.
Yeah.
Becomes a detriment.
You're trying to get a dopamine hit, right?
And it's not just the drugs and the alcohol. Everything else that you do so much of.
Yep.
That you start to decline. It's the dopamine. Exactly. It's the dopamine effect. It's the euphoria. Yep. It's the feeling good. Because unfortunately, we're in a society, Dusty, that it's to this point today. It's instant gratification. Look at TikTok. Look at social media. It's instant dopamine. You know, we don't know how to delay gratification.
Yeah.
We've gotten to the point where, unfortunately, a lot of people have learned not to work hard at gaining something because it's not fast enough, because we want what we want and we want it now. And that, for us, for a lot of addicts, has become a lifestyle. It was for me. I didn't want to feel this. I don't want to feel this. I don't want to think about this. I don't want to think about that. You know, I don't want to think about losing, you know, getting fired right now. So I'm going to go use. And it didn't matter if it was sex with women. It didn't, you know, using women to satisfy myself, or using drugs, or using alcohol, or anything else that helped me to not think about or feel what was the issue in my life. And being clean and sober through the steps helps you to address these issues. It did for me. It does for me currently. You know, I haven't worked all the steps yet. I had to start over. Because now I have a sponsor. I didn't have a sponsor when I got out of federal prison, even though I had to work the steps in a workbook. I had to work them with someone else because it does say in the fellowship that you being your own sponsor is the worst thing you can do. It's like going to court and being your own lawyer. You don't want to be your own lawyer.
Yeah.
You don't want to be your own sponsor.
Absolutely.
So holding myself accountable.
Here's where we're going to go from here. Is I've got a whole bunch of just great information from you. I appreciate you sharing again so much. And I've actually already had people commenting on just they're fascinated with your story. They're fascinated with the plight that you've had, your struggle, and your realizations and where you're at now. They think it's impressive. And I think that it gives just a tremendous amount of hope to those out there that think that they have it bad. And can hear what you've gone through, what you're currently going through still, because I mean the struggle never ends, right? But the hope and the positive mental attitude that you have going forward is truly inspiring, and I appreciate you, Carlos, for all this. If you
there's something that I tell a lot of people, there's no difference between you and me. Okay, there's no difference. Same blood, same mud.
Right.
You just have to, for some people, you have to come to a point where have you had enough?
Yeah. That's something
for me. Done? Are you really done? Because if you're not done, you're going to keep going. And it's just, I came to my realization that I was done. Remember, I was facing 10 years in federal prison. Anybody out there right now that's listening to this podcast with Dusty Dean and with myself, I hope that you listen, not just listen, but you take this in. Meditate on this. Think about this. Sit down.
Contemplate. I love you too, brother.
Chew this.
Hey, digest. You know, this is...
And I hope that it helps.
You basically answered the question that I was going to ask you.
You can get out of this.
If someone went to you for advice to try to free themselves from addiction, then what would be the thing that you say? And I think... Because I know that that's what it was for me. It took you can rationalize all day long. You can talk about I'm going to stop slowly using. I'm going to do this and that. But there definitely comes to a point where you just simply have to say, ask yourself, are you done? Are you done? Because if you're not, then and unfortunately nobody knows where that's at until they basically fall upon it. Some people say it's their metaphorical rock bottom, but some people's rock bottoms are just. You know, I'm tired of waking up kind of feeling crappy on a Sunday morning from Saturday night drinking. To some people, obviously going through, like your ordeal with federal prison. Or some people, inadvertently kill somebody drunk driving. You know, there's all these scales of being done. And people need to realize that they don't need to hit a rock bottom, a severe rock bottom with dire consequences. And at the very least, I like to say, what's your life going to be like without it? You know, think about that. What are the positive things that are going to happen in your life without the need to use this as a crutch in your life? Sure, the emotions may be a little bit more raw because you now have to deal with them. You're going to have sleepless nights. You're going to have cravings, right? But I mean, that's what it is to be human. We're all trying to figure this out. But the last thing we want to do is numb our reality, numb our days.
Oh, they're gonna be very wrong.
Because reality is that you're gonna get through 10, 20 years and look back and go, holy shit, that was a blur. And I do think that the benefit of getting sober, one of the massive benefits about getting sober is that there are people in this world that don't have addiction issues like we have, but they just exist. Yeah, but people just exist. They just live their lives without truly contemplating thinking and they just exist. And whereas people that are recovering from an addiction, they're so uber aware. They're so grateful for every day. They're so in touch with every moment of their life that
it's a
fuller life. It's a fuller life. I totally believe in that. And I think that at that point, that's where we kind of have the leg up. I feel like we're privileged in that regard because we truly appreciate everything in life. It's just, it's become much more full. Life has become way more full. Yeah.
And I can personally say this, that I have experienced great things in recovery. I mean, there's spiritual retreats where 1,200 people come and everybody's having a great time, you know, and nobody's using, nobody has to use. And we're all having a great time, barbecues. You can live life, without the use of drugs or alcohol or any, or being in the grips of any other addiction. You can't, it can be done. I've seen it done. I've attended these things and I've seen people live great lives. Now, it's not to say that things aren't going to happen. Things will happen. You will lose a job. I've lost jobs. You'll get into an accident. You'll lose your car. Shit. Life will happen. Life keeps going on. But, you know, you have to live life on life's terms. And the difference is, are you at a point where you will recognize that things happen and you don't have to use over it? Or will you allow things to happen to you and will you go back to those old behaviors?